I want to see all of Carolyn's aprons.
You mean her Masonic aprons?
Yeah, well, come on.
She's not an Illuminati bitch. Never was. She was born into an Illuminati family, but she never participated in it, other than with me, and we were fringe for many, many years. We were renegades. And remember, I was assigned in 53, 54 to North America because I fucked up in Iran in Guatemala, I think it was. Yeah, Guatemala. United Food Company nailed them. And Benz, right. So, you know, we it was only in the late years when I surprisingly, you know, got very influential that Carolyn was drawn in. As a matter of fact, Carolyn, in a sense, dropped out when she went to med school. She started creating her own life path, so she wasn't subject to that history, which you see in such TV shows as Homeland and State of Affairs, these new shows that show CIA women, the problems they get. Well, Carolyn would have had problems like that if she stayed in the scene.
Right.
But
why did they let her go? Bob, why did they let her go? They didn't know.
They didn't know. They still think she's working for them. They don't know that she left. She says, we need to have an infiltration in the medical world. And as Alex Jones says, Illuminati has all these solutions, all these wonderful health remedies so they can live forever. And we're fulfilling that by offering one of our sample Illuminati remedies called the iCell. So the Illuminati thinks that Carolyn's still working for him, but it's touch and go at this point about who knows what is happening.
Bob, what was Carolyn's task? What did she do?
You've seen in my diaries and in the memoir of Prince Charles, Carolyn monitored, she was part of Echelon. She's just reading the satellite information output.
Okay.
You know, she would read the meters, the data flow. That's mainly what Carolyn did in the 60s and 70s. So she could study stuff. She could go to med school. You know, she wasn't out there busting terrorists or selling drugs. She wasn't on the ground. And she wasn't in a bureaucracy. She wasn't in a desk job. She was like a cybernaut before people had that. You know, watching data come in.
Who did she work for?
Well, our boss, which was the owner of the Downton Abbey situation we came from.
And,
you know, remember, we were Butler family. She wasn't, but she married in with me. So then we were now no longer Butlers. We were involved with intelligence, and we worked for our family employer, which had been an employer for 300 years. And he was a member of the Secret Council 10. And then after World War I, when the assets of these oligarchs were diminished, they had to start using their own staff. So they got moved up to intelligence work. And that's why we went to Hitler in 36. And my father was sent on that mission, and we did other stuff. Then I got a gig in the whole thing. And then Carolyn was brought in later because her family was aristocratic. She's not a product of a Butler world like I am. And then she
So your family would work working. For Carolyn's? Would you say your family would have worked for Carolyn's family?
No. We worked for our thing. Carolyn didn't work for anybody other than the Secret Council 10 through me.
But her family, being aristocratic,
They weren't part of the Secret Council 10. They just were aristocratic. As I have in the diaries, her family went with the Vichy government, went with the Nazi takeover, where they didn't resist it. Which a lot of the elite in France did.
What kind of industry were they in?
No industry. They were just wealthy, idle rich.
What, they owned land?
Yes, they were aristocrats. They had titles. Carolyn could have had titles if she persisted, but she didn't. You can see that in Carolyn. You get her distance from people. She's the most friendly, nicest person, but there's a detachment in her that comes from her.
It's a formality. It's formal. A formal distance. That's what you see in the Queen and like all of the bloodlines. They have that. Subjects. Are we subject to them? Like subjects. Well, the mass unwashed.
Yeah.
Well, she's not like
now,
that.
Carolyn is one of the greatest hiders of that. She does not make people see that. But if you hang around long enough, you will notice. Like Carolyn, she doesn't listen to all that. She's sitting here watching TV. She's not listening to all of Payday. you know.
Right, right.
She
right.
does her own thing. So it's a very subtle detachment. That's like in her genes. It's not her personality. You know what I mean?
Right, absolutely.
Her exactly. conditioning.
It's not in her personality because she left it and went on the wild run with you, Bob.
Her parents were never keen on me. I mean, they're all dead
word.
Now, but I hadn't talked to them since the early 50s. And we weren't even married then.
Oh, my God, you sinners.
Well, no, I didn't hook up with her till late 50s, but when we didn't get married till 66, but we weren't involved with each other throughout the 50s, but we knew each other because I met her in 44.
Right.
And you'll see a couple of diary entries where I asked my father, who is she? What's up with her?
Right.
And he
right.
told
yeah.
me a bit about her family because he knew her parents. Anyways, without me, Carol would not be the rock and roll she is today. She'd, I don't know what she'd be, probably would have been in the car with Lady Diana, would have died with Lady Diana or something like that, you know.
She looks fabulous. She would look absolutely fabulous.
You mean back then? If she did die, she would look fabulous?
Diana, you know, I mean the kind of fashion
yeah.
and everything. You're saying that Carolyn's a fashion plate.
Yeah, she would have been.
I think she loves fashion. Tell us about those pictures. That Sarah or Sharon or somebody released of her, like, sitting in some 60s, like, hot pants, big old, like a beer.
Oh, those are on a website. Yeah, oh, that's when, yeah, that's her years ago, various
yeah,
pictures
but
through her phases of her life.
What was she being photographed for? What was she known as then? Was she a model?
You get the one where she's standing in a field. She got long hair, and she's sort of standing there provocatively. That's about 1976, so that's 2 years into med school.
Well, what was she being photographed for? She's in, like, a white jumpsuit.
Oh, you know what they are? Wait a minute. Those are two pictures. In New York City, in the boom of the late 90s, where a lot of young Generation Xers had lots of money, you could get money for any kind of project, this woman photographer proposed that she take pictures of up-and-coming women around New York City, including
yes.
Sting's wife. So she put out this book, and she Carolyn was known in the medical world as a whippersnapper in New York City because she was on a lot of New York media, and
yeah,
she
yeah.
looked good. So she fit the fashion plate ideals
yeah.
of the female author and photographer.
Right.
So one picture, she gets her to go to Central Park. They bring in a horse, and they put on this ice queen, white, aristocratic, bearing, detached image. Now, there's the detached part of Carolyn. That's actually a good – what I'm talking about is led right into this, though I didn't know it would go that way. Yes, that's the aristocratic part of Carolyn, sitting on the horse. Now, it actually was a cold winter day. She was freezing, but they managed to get the picture. She looks even probably colder because of the weather. So then the author knew – that she wasn't just an ice queen, she's also a fucking jujube, expendable jujube, you know, disco duck. And so they did this other picture, bringing in the Bob Mediacology theme. So they have a pile of TVs there, right? Dead TVs.
Right.
And she's sitting there, standing there insouciantly, you know, indifferently, punctually, with a T-shirt we got from Jerry Fiocca, which says, I asked her to wear this, says, I know Paul Buff personally. Now, it's the most obscure thing you could say. Who the hell is Paul Buff? Paul Buff is a really important person in the music industry. He's the guy in Cucamonga, California, that had the most advanced studio, 24 tracks or something, in the early 60s, and many of the surfing hits were recorded there.
Oh, wow.
Well, Frank met this guy in the early 60s and went and became a student of his, and that's how Zappa learned all his studio editing magic, by working in Paul Buff's studio. He eventually sells it to Frank. Then a little time after that, Frank gets busted in March 1965 by the local police because they don't like what's going on at the studio. There's lots of blacks being recorded there, Captain Beefheart, all this stuff's going on in a little town. So it stood out. Lorraine Belcher was a young woman around there who had a baby. Maybe it was a multiracial baby, I'm not sure. Anyway,
yeah.
A biracial baby or a mixed blood baby in a small town, I don't think that was cool, and she looked rather young. So they set up Frank. They pretended they were businessmen, the police. So we want a sex tape for our stag club, stagmen. So Frank and Lorraine just bounced on some bed springs and made some sounds and then presented the recording the next day to this guy, and then it turned out he was a detective. So Frank was in jail for 10 days, worst 10 days of his life, he said, and he got out of jail because his father pulled some strings, and then he hightailed out of there, left the studio, just left it there, and went to L.A., and that's when he got involved with the Mother's Invention. And, of course, with that kind of record, it worked out because he couldn't get drafted. So he was able to run around America, get stirring up shit in the late 60s and not vulnerable to the draft. So the bust worked for him. So anyways, Paul Buff, he goes on to become a big deal in Nashville. So Jerry had the T-shirt in 1993, so he gave it to me. I give it to Carol, and this is in 99. And when the book comes out, I track down Paul Buff and call him. And I tell him about what happened to his T-shirt. He hears the whole story, and then he says that he's going to go get the book and see it. I mean, he appreciated the humor of it. You know, this fashion plate saying, I know Paul Buff personally. Then after we finished talking on that, he says, so you know who made that shirt? And I said, no. He said, I did. He made that T-shirt.
Oh, my God.
Sent it around to people. I know Paul Buff personally. He promoted himself, and ironically. So it's pretty neat to meet him and tell him that his shirt was immortalized in this New York book.
Okay, so that's what it was, his profile. Yeah, they were so striking. It was like Annie Leibovitz. I mean, somebody really took time to, like, you know, capture a character and everything. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, they were well done by the photographer. And when I showed them to William Irwin Thompson, he looks at the horse picture, and he's kind of like not saying, but he's frowning. And then I turn the page and show the casual Carolyn with the I know Paul Buff and leaning up against the broken TV. He's like, oh, that's the Carolyn I know. So, you know, he was thrown by the aristocratic part. He didn't know Carolyn enough to know the aristocratic part of her. But it is very accurate. The queen bitch and then the Illuminati bitch on the horse and then the hanging out with the Mediacology props, you know, with the dead TV and saying, I know Paul Buff personally. Hey, Carolyn, the pictures of you on the horse and the TV sets from New York, I know Paul Buff perfectly. You're sitting beside the horse. You added them to your Facebook page?
I don't think
so. So Sarah put them up somewhere? So you sent them to Sarah, Carolyn?
Yeah.
They're good to have up. I mean, it's part of Carolyn's New York life. And, you know, right after the market crashed and all those projects didn't happen anymore, nobody could get money for any little vanity thing going. There was no money in New York, and then they got hit by my buddies, the Al Qaeda. That put a stop to that. Put a stop to that fucking nonsense of ignoring me. I wasn't going to have it. I put up with the 90s ignoring me, but I was not going to have another decade. So I said, if you ignore me, then we all go down. So we all went down. I hid out in City Island, and then ended up in Utopia.
Who was your crew that did this? That you put together for this 911 hit?
Oh, I had nothing to do with that. I just said my buddies. I didn't say how long I was buddies with them. And I denounced them on February 28th, after they fucking bombed the World Trade Center, February 27th, I think it was, 1993. The next day I said, you fuckers, you did this without my authorization. You're fucking up the fucking xenocrity of the whole situation. Get out of here. Get out of my sight. And I kicked them out of the room that we're in. Get the hell out of here, you people. We would not work together anymore. That was totally unauthorized. It did no good. Actually, China, I told, was going to profit from this. The whole World Trade Center Rockefeller Combine is gone. It'll now be shipped to Malaysia, to Kuala Lumpur, and fuck, you're fucked. China is going to now run the daily monitoring of everybody's credit exchange.